Are you ready to dream on? Do you know how to fly high and soar among the clouds? Get ready to live adventurously, because the Laura Meeks Show starts now. Listen as Laura lifts you off the ground while teaching you how to fly high. Forget ground-level drama and be prepared to confront your dreams head-on as she encourages you to navigate towards your North Star and into what just might be the best life you've imagined. Dream on. Live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show.
This is Laura Meeks. I welcome you to the early December, I guess. I welcome you all for a really exciting show today. This person that's sitting next to me is Yolanda Nava, and we will introduce her here in more detail in a second. But I think you're going to find her, the sharing of her story ties in, I think, a lot to some of the challenges that I've talked about over the past couple of shows, and the idea that we all do face challenges in life. Some seemingly more challenging than others. And so a lot of what I want to talk about today and kind of dive right in on is the idea of facing a challenge that is unexpected and how to deal with that. Now, Yolanda has been involved in broadcast TV and journalism, had a full, bountiful career in that when an illness struck and she lost her eyesight. And what I found so interesting, and now a little history between Yolanda and myself, within the spiritual community that I deal in, I had the pleasure of listening to you tell your story. That is for sure why I wanted to bring you on the show. Is because your experience, I think, in so many ways faces a number of fears that people have, and of all the people I've met, you have handled this with humor and compassion and understanding, and you have a new book out, so I want to toss that in, Through the Dark,
which is forthcoming next spring, so we don't out yet.
But
look for it. Yeah.
Look for it?
Yeah.
All right. Put it on your Amazon wish list.
Yeah.
It's called Through the Dark by Yolanda Nava, N-A-V-A.
So, well, I'm delighted to join you today, and I loved your intro.
Is it?
Because, you know, setting intentions and thinking about what we really want to create in our lives is very, very important, and certainly that concept at the opening of your show is what I did without perhaps even being totally conscious of what I was doing. But I had been raised in a certain way, and I, you know, attend the Center for Spiritual Living here in Palm Desert. Yeah. And so these are spiritual tools that I've worked with and learned as a child at my mother's knee, but only really came to understand them after the blindness.
Yeah, this is
after the blindness.
Well, for the audience, a quick synopsis of where you were in your life and what happened, so they can get a feeling of, you know, some people are born without sight, mm-hmm. others have other issues. You were well into your life when this happened. So how about?
Well, I was a grown up.
I was a grown up.
I continue to be a grown up, although I'm much more playful than I was before, which is interesting given, yeah, you know, everything. But the I was working for Governor Bill Richardson in New Mexico at the around the time that I lost sight. And I had actually left his service on Tuesday night, and my husband at the time and I went out to dinner. I came back from that dinner and I immediately became very, very sick. I vomited all night long for about 12 hours off and on. I thought I was going to die. It was racked with pain.
Did food poisoning hit you? Like, oh my God.
Well,
I
don't know if it was food poisoning or if I was poisoned by somebody. But anyway,
the mother Russians.
There's a one, we don't know really what caused it, but I got very sick. And the next day I called my doctor, my primary care, and I said, you know, this is what happened. She's go get rehydrated intravenously. So I did that. Within the next day, I was blinded one eye, could not open my eye. It was like I had Ball's palsy and I couldn't open my eye. And it didn't really bother me because I could read, I could look out the window, I could see the beautiful, I got another one, and I could see the beautiful vistas from the sofa. And I wasn't feeling well. I was not, you know, I wasn't right, but I mentally felt fine. And I felt no discomfort in the fact I couldn't see out of one eye. I put an eye patch on and went on my merry way.
It's like, I got things to do.
Within 3.5 weeks, I was blind in the other eye. And that went over 3 days. So really, it went very suddenly within 3.5 weeks. The shift had a lot of things that I now discover might have meaning. But at the time, I was just observing this. I'm an observer. I'm a journalist. I have the observer's eye. And I just observed the process. Oh my gosh, isn't this interesting? I'm losing my sight. And first day it was like looking through a mesh Burke, although I've never looked through one. Then it went to gray. It went totally black. And I still didn't feel any trepidation. I didn't feel any fear. I just went, oh, isn't this interesting? I'm losing my sight. And then bang, it's gone. So I had to completely rebuild from there. I had no idea that this was anything more than something very temporary.
Yeah, I was going to say, when in that journey did you go, oh my God, I don't think I'm getting my sight back? Because I would think that, you know, one eye goes, you think, oh, you know, I got to get to the doctor. We're going to figure this out. This is, you know, we're going to fix this. Oh, now my otherwise, well, we definitely need to accelerate this thing and get my eyesight back. Then there has to be a time where they're kind of like, it's not going back.
Yeah. Well, I had had a series of sinus and ear infections for about 8 months before the loss of sight. Nothing showed up in my lab work. They were testing me. I mean, I was seeing a doctor every month. Yeah. And everything is in the blood work. And unless something shows up there, they don't know what to do. They should have sent me to Houston. They should have sent me to LA. They should have done something other than ignore it. I said, oh, well, this is passing. It's going to take care of itself. Yeah. You know, I saw a neurologist. I was going to doctors. I went to the hospital, had testing, and nothing showed up. So I figured, well, it's just going to pass. To this day, Laura, I hold that the sight is there. Although the doctors say that because of the autoimmune illness that was ultimately diagnosed and treated, I have perfectly healthy. I have no disease. I haven't had any since 12 to 15 months after getting out of the hospital, which is a blessing. And I'm very grateful for that. But no disease now. But at the time, I've always felt that the sight is there. And I've declared that for myself. Now, is sight just physical? Is sight possibly something else that's involved in seeing? And in my book, I take the position that when I was sighted, I was blind to many things. And in the blindness, I could see with greater discernment and clarity. Now, that might sound strange to people out of the, you know, out of the audience, but it is significant. And I love to quote the definition of eyes in the glossary of the book Science and Health, the Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. But when I read that again after losing sight, I recalled it. And it's eyes, colon, spiritual, not mental, not material. I'm sorry, let me back up. Eyes, colon, spiritual discernment, period. Mental, not material, period. Referring to Jesus, having ye eyes, see ye not. So that is what I have taken to be my eyes, that I have used the power of intention. I've used spiritually affirmative prayer. I've used all kinds of self-talk to stay in that place of knowing someday.
One of the things I wrote down, you mentioned your from the Bible, from some of the material that you sent me. You said that you had a number of sleepless nights, and getting through them took meditation and prayer.
Yes.
Now, interesting, in my historical background, My mom was Unitarian, but we hardly if ever went to church. So I was kind of born into the boomer age of science cures everything.
Yes.
You know, we just need to do another study and we'll figure all it out. But that's hocus pocus of another being or some other energy, you know, whatever. Sounds cool. When Annie and I got married, Annie was Catholic. And it was in and of itself, it's kind of a story, but we were apart in the military for 2 years. She finally came down to live with me on the island of Guam. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's Sunday. I'm going to Mass.
Yeah.
It's like, you're going where? It's like, I'm Catholic. It's like, really? I must have missed that part. But we ended up getting very involved in the Catholic Church and had a very, I have to say, from my personal point of view, had a very spiritual experience. Sadly, when I started to transition from male to female, then the Catholic hierarchy had no idea what to do with me. Now, what I found interesting is the lay Catholics would have accepted me, no question. Now, their spirituality wasn't really an issue, but obviously, you know, the hierarchy has rules and they need to keep track of the rules, and that became a challenge. But the reason I bring that up is that had I lost my sight, or had I had to, I didn't actually even know about my gender issue until I was about 32, in the sense that I knew what it was. I knew I was different for a long, long time, but I mean, without context, I'm just a guy that has a problem. but now that I know what the problem is, so I was midlife, and for me, that would have been challenging if it had happened any earlier. It would have been really challenging because I would have had no spiritual basis to play with. And so one of the things that you talk about is the power that you had from your spiritual side, that you had meditation, you had prayer. Tell me, because I think for our audience, this is a real key spot. I do think that there's a number of people who would be listening to us today that might not have a huge spiritual background and would want to know, hey, if I lost my sight or divorce, I mean, there's 1,000 things that happened to us. Tell me about how did that help you, and why did that help you?
I think there are a couple of reasons for that. I was raised with a belief, a deep faith in God, and the God that I learned about was all loving, all knowing, all wise, a mother, father, God, because we couldn't manifest as ourselves if we didn't have that mother.
That's the God I heard about in the Catholic Church.
Well, no, you wouldn't. But see, this is what's happening. And our sense of God is changing. And when people say, why do bad things happen to good people? Well, what is the God that makes, this isn't a, I don't believe in a God of vengeance.
I would wholeheartedly agree.
And I think that the teachings that helped me get through those dark and lonely nights in the hospital, which you referred to, it was scary as all get out. and the truth of the matter is that I was in and out of the hospital for 5 weeks. I had to go home 2 weeks in between, come back, do another biopsy. They did not know what was wrong. And there was a lot of uncertainty. And yet what I fell back upon automatically, as I have in other circumstances when I've had, quote, an accident or something that could have broken my neck or killed me, I immediately went to those tools that my mother had taught me. And I had also talked to my boss at the Christian Science Center about what I was about, what had happened. I'd lost sight and I was going into the hospital. I knew that they couldn't treat you when you're going to mix medicine with spirituality. But in the thought that I have come to know since I was a child, there is no reason to think that it's either or. I maintain that I walked out of the hospital. I mean, I was alive. I was close. I was this close to death. I walked out of the hospital alive, actually in a wheelchair, because they can't let you turn loose until they put you in your car. Yeah. But I did leave the hospital very much alive and in recovery. And they had diagnosed and they had started a treatment. And they said, you know, we've never seen anything like this. You've improved 150% in 2 days. We've never seen that. And I said, well, just know, and I had my hands like this, talking to the doctor in front of me, just know that I'm already at the end of the tunnel. And that I am whole, I'm healthy, I'm well, I'm even sighted. I said, just know that I'm very grateful for what you're doing for me here in the hospital, but no, I'm already out at the end of the tunnel. So I think that setting of that intention for myself was very important. And I was using my spiritual tools. I declared perfection and wholeness through different things I had learned. As a young child, there's no life, truth, intelligence, nor substance in matter. All is infinite mind, that it's infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. That's powerful.
That is powerful.
That's truth.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I did was I self-nurtured myself. When I was not feeling well as a child, my mother would sing hymns to me and recite poetry to me that was written by Mary Baker Eddy. And one of them was about being on upward wing tonight, that the Creator is inherently supporting and nurturing and guiding us all the time. And so this self-nurturing, this singing these song that my mainly one song that my mother would sing to me, pulled me through, because I would sing it. I felt it. I knew it to be true. And the other part of that song, apart from, you know, being on upward wing tonight, on uplifted wing tonight, that's very important. Right. I'm not going to fall. The nestling's faltering flight, the little bird who has to jump out of the cave, out of the nest and fly. Something buoys that little fledgling up. And in the poem, Mary Baker Eddy is saying, guide my child on upward wing tonight. So I was self-guiding myself. I was providing my mother love to myself and bringing in God's love to heal the condition that I was experiencing. And I say it was spiritual tools and damn good medicine that combined.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of a collaborative event. I mean, I really don't think that you can just affirm your way to pure health. No. I mean, I'm not saying that you couldn't. I think it's advantageous to take advantage of everything that's around you.
Well, you have to know that we are taught. Well, you have to know that God is in everything, in everyone. And so there is support in every single aspect around us, and we can draw from it. I drew from both spirit and I drew from medicine, and I had the best medical team you could have at St. John's Hospital in Los Angeles in Santa Monica. So it the combination, and I had prayer chains. I had girlfriends in Los Angeles, you know, at Agape, you know, prayer chains. And in New Mexico, I had prayer chains. So I was very divinely provided for. Everyone was calling upon God and angels and anything that was going to get me through that experience. And I held it for myself as an intention. And when we pray affirmatively, we have to feel it in our bones. We have to feel it. And when we get to that place, it's not wishful thinking. It's feeling and setting the intention, doing the daily work, doing the prayer, doing whatever you have to do to clear your mind, because thoughts are things. Thoughts are things, and we get what we pay attention to. So if we're whining and moaning and negative and this and that and the other thing, oh, I have this and that and the other thing. Okay, you're going to have it, because I am is a declaration of spirit, of God.
Well, and I want to kind of go back to that idea. If you're grappling with, you know, divorce, weight, any of a billion things that happen to humans. I don't know if you saw this. I did a very interesting little video at the center where we were talking about manifesting. And I told the story about manifesting golf balls.
I remember that very vividly. Yes.
And the whole kind of the issue was, is I was walking around a golf course in my daily walk, and I was power walking, and I was really not paying attention to anything around me when, I found a golf ball. After that, then I became aware. That I think is a piece of pie.
Awareness is very important.
have to be aware that this, there are tools, and I would kind of, this is kind of where I'm going. I think there are tools that you can use to help you get through challenging times. And then what I found is that when I started walking, I don't think I really was purposely doing this, but I did intend when I walked out the door, you know, the first time I found the golf ball, I thought, wow, that would be so cool if I could see, get another one. I mean, honestly, to me, there were like Easter eggs. I mean, it's not that there's a lot of value in golf balls, but it was a thing that wasn't in my world before I found it. And so I was like, oh, wow, here's this cute little thing. And then as I started down that road, I started intending as I left the door, it's like, I'm going to find more golf balls today. And it was, I think that's an important piece is that that is setting your mind into motion in a positive way. And it's so, I think, insidious that we grow up in a culture. You know, I know that my family members, when I was growing up, had a real bend towards, you know, what's wrong with the world. Yes. You know, let me tell you what's wrong. You know, let me tell you what's wrong with her. Let me tell you what's wrong with him. You know what grandma did, what was wrong. And you end up focusing on all of the wrong
negative things.
And guess what? You have a negative world around you that you're manifesting. This world is manifesting from your thinking. So here you are facing, we've got just a minute or two before the break. I want to talk about the one piece of your pie of why me, Lord. One of the things I found in my gender transition. So here I'm walking along. I'm a tall white male in the military, and I'm doing my thing, and all of a sudden I become aware that, oh, all these feelings that I have on this other side that I've been grappling with just and kind of burying have meaning, and that they have this meaning that I'm transgender. And then I'm thinking, man, if I tell anybody this, I'm going to lose everything I have, my wife, my kids, my job, my flying career, everything that I've worked so hard. And then comes the, why me, Lord?
I never went to any kind of self-pity. A psychologist friend of mine, I asked him, I said, in your clinical experience, how is it that some of us can move through cataclysmic, life-changing, traumatic events like losing sight or anything, you know, transgender, to any cataclysmic, life-changing event? Right. And he said, you having a positive family structure growing up, which many people don't have.
Yeah.
Secondly, having the belief in a higher power, something higher than yourself. I call it God. And the third thing is not becoming a victim, no self-pity. Because when we go to that place, we're wallowing in stuckness that's going to keep us wallowing, not thriving. And so we really have to think into reality, think into being that which we want to manifest. And it takes conscious, alert attention to that and the setting of intention. And so it's very, very important to set our thought, I'm so grateful. Nobody, no doctor, nobody said, oh, it could be a tumor. It could be brain cancer. It could be lupus. It could be this. It could be anything. Nobody said that to me because I did not know. So I had no poison in my mind.
Did you ever watch the TV show House?
No. I know about it.
Yeah. So he's a genius thing, and he's working with his team always to solve these incredible health things. But there's one character in that show that invariably brings up during their discussion, it could be lupus. It's not. And he always going, it's not lupus. And that's become kind of a family for us.
Well, it can be, but what happens is people awfulize. And so you're going to have a baby, for example. Now having a baby is the most natural thing in the world. And then they start telling you all these horror stories about how the baby came up the wrong way around and they had to do one, da, 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 all this kind of stuff. Everybody seems to want to come in. Too many people, not everybody. But a lot of people come in with all this negative stuff. Do you need to hear that at the moment?
Absolutely not. Well, I'm going to stop you right there for just a second. It's time for a break. Everybody, time out. We're going to take a break. This is Laura Meeks. I'm here with Yolanda Nava, we were talking about overcoming some interesting challenges in life. And we will be back right shortly, and we're going to talk more about how you can make it through some of your biggest challenges in life. Laura Meek Show will be right back.
Do you know how powerful your thoughts and beliefs are in determining your experience of your life? Is it really true that simply by changing some of the words you use in your day-to-day language, that you can change your life? I'm Megan Edge. Join me on Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Join us, Tina and Laura, on the Ghost Helper Show, where the paranormal is more normal than you think. We break down the doors of the scary and the airy fairy in a logical, scientific approach. As psychics who once led ordinary lives until paranormal events reshaped our world, join us every Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com and Facebook Live. We prove that the paranormal is more normal than most people think.
Do you know how to achieve wellness in all areas of your life? Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. Signs of wellness are a capacity to love and ability to nurture, a sense of purpose, a good sense of humor and plenty of fun in your life, a concern for others and a respect for the environment, a conscious commitment to personal excellence, a sense of balance and integrated lifestyle, and capacity to cope with whatever life presents. Well, people enjoy their lives and want them to last as long as possible. That's why the wellness mindset usually accompanies other constructive, healthy lifestyle habits. By adopting a wellness mindset and behaviors like eating well, taking the right nutrition for the body, exercising, and saying affirmations are just a few things to structure a healthy system of values and beliefs. I will be your wellness coach to help you achieve a wellness lifestyle. Call us at 888-777-4232. That's 888-777-4232. And visit us at MaryJaneMack.com.
Coming to you live on TransformationTalkRadio.com is the Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up with Claudette Rowley. Powerful conversations, practical innovations, and transformative solutions as Claudette and her guests delve into the possibilities and what she calls reality resistance. Join the cultural revolution and annihilate obstacles. Check it out at culturalbrilliance.com.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome back. This is Laura Meeks. You're on the Laura Meeks Show. We're here today with Yolanda Nava. Yolanda, now, for those of you, I'm here. Those of you joining us, just to catch you up, if you didn't see the first part of the show, Yolanda had a career in journalism and in television and in the late beginnings of your life. We had a discussion earlier on when your middle age starts. I'm 64, so I'm just starting my middle age, I figure. But she lost her sight in the midst of a career, and it didn't come back yet. And so she's dealing with that big change. And so a lot of what I love talking about is how to deal with change. I've obviously gone through a number of changes in my life, but one of the things that, and I'm going to kind of start here. Well, before I get started, a couple of quick things. One is Yolanda's got a new book coming out. It's called Through the Dark. Now, you had a first book.
I had a first book. My first book was published in 2000 by Simon & Schuster. It was called It's All in the Frijoles.
Frijoles.
Frijoles is a Spanish word for beads. And it's actually not a cookbook, except for life and building character, but it's a book of virtues. And I interviewed 70 famous Latinos, Hispanos, about how they learned the virtues growing up. And then I put stories, songs, poems, and proverbs at the back of each chapter. I identified 14 virtues, the first five being responsibility, respect, hard work, loyalty, and faith, all the way through fortitude, prudence, and chastity, and caridad. So it's an important book. And it won a best-selling book award.
When did you write that book?
That came out in 2000. That's 19 years
ago. You were cited when this...
Oh, I was cited. Yeah. I was cited until 10 years ago.
Okay.
I've been
So 2009.
Sight. Yeah.
Okay.
And so this is the first book. The Through the Dark is the first book, and it'll come out next spring. It's the first book I've written blind. I had to regain all the computer skills and technology skills to be able to type. And I used to type 100 words a minute. I'm not doing that now, but I could go faster than the computer automaton.
Let's go down that road for a second, because there's a couple of things that you've said that I want to kind of merge into our discussion here. One is that it seems to me that in talking with you that's very clear that you lost your sight, but that's not who you are.
Yeah.
And I've often used this example. I was working in radio. I had a local radio show last year, and I was working with a guy who had lost his arm. Now, it was interesting. First of all, it was interesting because I went to my first staff meeting and we're sitting there. He's sitting behind me and I kind of glanced back and it's like, there's something missing, but don't turn around. Yeah. And then I kind of turned around and it's kind of like, yeah, the guy is missing an arm. And so I came up to him after the meeting and I said, yeah, I don't want to ask this the 10,000th time, but I noticed that you don't have an arm. And he goes, oh my God, I lost it in a shark attack. I go, oh my God, you're kidding. He goes, yes, I'm kidding.
It's like, yeah. Well, it is, like, there is no loss. I mean, it's interesting because I woke up blind that morning after a 3-day loss of sight in that second eye. And I fortunately had a friend who was staying on the ranch. And when I told her what had happened, she said at one point, when she was kind of helping me make phone calls, so I couldn't do all that myself, write checks and all that, she said, you know, Yolanda, you're going to be the same woman you've always been. You're going to not be a blind woman, but you're going to be a woman who happens to be without sight.
Without sight.
And so when I immediately knew I had to do something positive with this experience, I asked myself very early on, why blindness? To what am I blind? Now, who asks such questions? Yeah. But I asked myself this.
Smart people ask these
questions. My girlfriend, when we were talking years later, she said, well, why did this happen? Why did that happen? Why did your husband do this? Why did he do that? I said, don't go there. It is what it is. And we have to deal with what is, not whining and moaning, oh, why me, poor me, poor me? Because then you're creating more of that and you're not empowering yourself to move forward. I chose to fly on upward wings, just like that poem talked about, the little fledgling birds. It's a choice. And so when bad things happen, and they do, cataclysmic, terrifying things happen, how do we choose to respond? Are we going to collapse? Or are we going to say, okay, I have to create another life for myself, perhaps a different life? Mine is only a life without sight. I'm still traveling and running the streets. I went to Mexico City alone a year and a half ago. And I travel alone. I do a lot of stuff. I go shopping. I cook. I entertain. I even met the love of my life.
Yeah.
There's nothing to stop you except your own sense of pity and limitation.
Well,
that sounds mean. It's not. It's not meant to be.
But it's an important discussion to have because I found the same thing. You know, I grew up as a guy. I had everything that you would want as a guy. I'm a tall, I'm 6'3". I'm physically capable. I'm a white guy in America. I'm college educated. I'm a pilot. I mean, I've got everything that a guy would want. And all of a sudden, then I realize, hey, I'm faced now with a challenge. I'm faced with a challenge of that's not really who I am. But if I go in this new direction and change my gender presentation, then then I may lose everything. But very much like you say, one of the things that I would pass on to people is that it was only through this gender transition that I was able to actually, very much like you say, see from different eyes. I mean, I have to tell you, it is a very interesting spot to be in, I think.
Well, yes.
To have had grown up male and been in, you know, been indoctrinated or incorporated into female culture to be allowed to be in that space and to see that side of me. Because one of the things I've learned is that this is my most authentic presentation to date.
Well, that's powerful.
That's a very powerful thing. And I would not have had that had I not had the courage to say, you know what, if I have to lose everything to get to this other side, it's going to be worth it. And there are, I really do believe, and you had mentioned this, I think, in somewhere in your book, that everybody has a gift. And I think there is purpose, perhaps, into the challenges that you face and the challenge that I face and that everybody faces. Yeah. Those are the, to use an old analogy, you know, if you're going to make steel, you have to go through the fire. There's certain things that have to occur when you have to build your strength and do something.
Well, again, we get what we give attention to. So you set an intention, you knew you had to rebuild your life. I set the intention that I was going to be an active, dynamic woman, just as I had always been. It just happens that I can't see. So I need help from time to time. I have many angels. And the other day I was at the train station and we thought it was going to rain. And so I asked the driver that took me there, get me a security guard so I could get a red cap right away because I don't want to be outside in the rain if it starts to rain. Well, I had the 18 that day. He was an Alfred, the driver. He got me a security guard who was an Antonio.
Yeah.
And then the third guy that helped me, the red cap that helped me, was an Alfredo. And so, and he said to me, he said, how long have we been doing this, Yolanda? It's been 7 years. So I do have wonderful help. I also move out into the world without fear. And I think one of the things that helped me in the hospital was I really was thinking about how do I overcome this, the pain and the fear. I automatically started praying, spiritually affirmative prayer, and singing to myself. And in the poem, the hymn that I was singing to myself, it talks about make me glad for every scalding tear, for hope deferred, in gratitude disdain, to seek and love more, for every hate and fear no ill, since God is good and loss is gain. Now, who says loss is gain? When I went through the hospital experience, thankfully, I was diagnosed and treated so that I came out of the hospital alive, prepared to thrive and lead, create a new life again. And I immediately set the intention of how do I learn from this? How do I help other people get through these cataclysmic events? Because we can do it. And there are people who are stellar examples of it. And we need to learn more about them. I only learned about Helen Keller. I cannot imagine being both deaf and blind, but you know, she's done it. She did it, and other people do it as well. So it doesn't matter what cataclysmic, life-changing thing we experience. We have the ability to intend to create a good, whole, healthy, active, meaningful life. And in my case, it was the sense of purpose that I had to write if I wanted to live. I had and thrive. I had to write. I saw a very clear pathway. I did a dialogue. I do a process called a journal through the intensive journal program. And we do dialogues with person, place, event, society, or body. And all of these dialogues are very important. It's an I, thou experience. But when I did dialogue with body, it tells me many things. You follow that dialogue. You obey what your dialogue body tells you. And I did a dialogue for work one particular weekend when I was staying with a friend after I got out of the training program in Colorado. And I saw that I had to go straight ahead. I couldn't go to the left or right. I couldn't do any of that. I had to go straight ahead. I had to write for my life. And so it was a setting of a higher purpose, of setting a higher a thing towards which I could work, which has driven me.
Well, and I think we had a discussion in the car about purpose, and our discussion kind of revolved around the fact that as you're getting older, you know, to get into retirement and do the things that people do, we have set an expectation within our cultural stories that you retire at 65 and then you're an old person, and then you take a couple cruises and sit around and see the grandkids, and then you go out somewhere after that. But we've had a number of examples, and you're a great one in that when something happens, and, you know, in my case, I needed, very much like you, you know, I'm thinking, hey, I was a pilot in the Air Force, and if I make a transition and become and present female in the world that I was in 1995, when that was happening, my one thought was I could go to the airlines, but the airlines would never have hired a transgender woman pilot in the 90s.
Yeah.
Now, maybe they would, I may be wrong, but that was my impression. So then the question was, so my life is over. I guess I'll never fly again. Well, that's obviously not true. I fly gliders now. Flying is always part of my life, and I love that piece of it. It just means that we had to make sure that we were heading for some purpose, to find a new purpose.
Well, I think purpose is very important, and the setting of intention. When I went on pilgrimage to see John of God back in 2017 in March. Because a friend had said, I know you're going to see again, go see John of God. And the first time she said it, I didn't have time to break away because I was in the middle of my book. Well, I was in a better position in 2017. And we were given three intentions. So the first, obviously, was the restoration of my sight. And I do perceive. I do see with spiritual discernment. A lot of people said, you can see. You're just fooling us all. Because you see everything. You see everything.
I'll try that.
The second intention that I set, without intending to have these intentions, they just come up. I had to come up with something fast in English to translate into Portuguese for John of God. And the second intention was to eliminate any impediments to fulfilling my highest purpose. Now, that's a big intention. And probably larger than the first one. And the third intention was to be able to love a man unconditionally and be loved unconditionally in return, because I'd never experienced that. I've been married three times. I've never had unconditional love. And I set that intention. And guess what? A week later, the love of my life showed up and we were fixed up. And that experience has been up, you know, it's been at a distance. It's been close up. It's the most amazing experience I've ever had in relationship.
Wow.
And I am very grateful for it. He's traveling all over the world now, so he's not around. We're not in, you know, a relationship now. But I had it. Now, most people would pine that. Oh, well, he's gone. You don't cry over spilled milk. You enjoy what you got out of it.
You don't strike me as somebody who's
No, I'm not going to do that. But I do believe that if it's right, it will come back around again at the time that, you know, the cycle finishes. His work cycle. And so I just hold that open, and whatever goes on in between, I'm not stopping my life. I'm living my life. I've written the book. I've got to launch it. I got to do a lot of stuff. I started writing poetry to him. That opened up a whole different area of creativity. He became my muse. And he said to me, he said, well, I'm glad I can be of some help. I can't be with you. I mean, I'm glad I can be of some purpose, you know? And so the creativity just opened up, and that was part of heart opening up and really feeling the sense of unconditional love, which I think is a place all of us can move towards, because instead of living pitiful, self-pitying lives over what spilt milk happened, what eye loss happened, whatever catastrophe happened, we need to figure out, okay, now what? What do I do? To what? What am I being called?
This would be my question. You know, as I'm thinking about our viewers, and they're going through stuff. First of all, can I assume that you're as human as I am and you have depression?
I don't have depression. I might have momentary periods of pity party, but not really. I went to a self-mastery program in my 30s, and I've done it a couple of times. And she would say, you can't hang around all day in your pajamas. This is not acceptable behavior. And she said, you just shorten it by an hour every day. Yeah. And in the morning, you'll give yourself 20 minutes of pity party, move yeah. on. And so if I do feel down, I don't feel like doing what it is I right. need to do. I say, okay, what's this all about? All right, maybe you need to do a little bit more spiritual work. Maybe you need to do a little meditation right now. You need to do some self-care. What is this really all about? And I think, too, we were going to talk about fear. To not be afraid to face the day. Fear is F-E-A-R, is false evidence appearing real. And so we have to know what is our real evidence. We have to know that what we give attention to is what we're going to get. So we always have to be thinking about, why am I here? What is my purpose? What is mine to do? And if you're busy doing what is yours to do, you discovered yours, and right. and I've rediscovered mine, and I'm giving it time. I started meditating daily. I really get more time to my spiritual practice and reading and studying, you know, the spiritual tools. But when you're on purpose, you're not worried about gossiping about somebody else. You're not worried about what somebody else is doing. You're worried. You're thinking about, not worrying. You're thinking of it, intending and taking the action steps to fulfill your highest purpose.
Right.
And well, so and when I, you're I there, yeah.
One of the challenges, though, I find it, because I came into this spiritual game late in life. One of the most, I think the tipping point for me was a book by Neil Donald Walsh called Conversation with God.
Yeah.
Now, I had been in the Catholic Church, and I mean, in the land of, hey, were we involved in church? I mean, we were Eucharistic ministers, we were readers, we're on the board, we taught a youth group. Were we involved? Yes, we were. But I don't think it was spiritual in the sense that you're talking about, in the fact of you going out and working on, you know, finding your purpose, being inspired to find things. And so one of the things that I would want to discuss a little bit is that you have a lot of tools, but what if you don't have a lot of tools?
You begin where you are. And when I first got out of the hospital, I slipped backwards on the hardwood floor and I hit my head very hard on the mesquite headboard. Oh,
it feels bad.
And I heard these words, pay attention, everybody, blockhead, hardhead, knucklehead. And I looked up towards the ceiling and I said, okay, what's the message? And I got it. You need a daily spiritual practice, Yolanda. And so I began to meditate. I took classes on meditation. I had learned to have transcendental meditation when I was in college and then mm-hmm. dropped it. Why, I don't know. It was wonderful, but I did. I got busy. Stop being so busy and be on purpose about transforming your life. And it takes affirmative prayer. It takes meditation. It takes eating right and exercising and being proactive and looking at what is yours to do. We each have something.
Let's talk about the difference between slowing down and meditating versus doing, doing, doing. I mean, we are very much in a doing, doing culture.
Yeah, but it's busy work.
I am in technology. We had this whole thing. We could talk for days. technology. I in front of me, I have endless beeps of the news and the latest impeachment and all this jazz. And Facebook is rolling by, and I've got all these. I must have, you know, 60 emails a day and all these people calling and all these things, and I'm doing. But I would think that for me, I would agree with you 100%. A daily time. What I've started to do is get up earlier and earlier, where I'm not, you know, if I'm getting up at 5 or 6 o'clock and I go out to the hot tub, or I'm sitting down here in my office where there's nothing really else, excuse me, going on, where I can stop and start listening. Because I think one of the challenges is for me earlier on, when I'm flying and I'm doing this, I'm raising kids, I got a family and I'm paying bills, there wasn't a lot of time to say, okay, what's my purpose? It's like, yeah, I'll get to that. And I think part of the challenge, or part of the benefit that I've found in the spiritual world and the training and the tools that I've gotten since then, is the fact that if you do realize that taking 30 minutes to an hour a day where you're slowing down, then you're actually, it's one of those things where you're actually multiplying your ability to do because you're getting inspiration.
Yes. You are getting inspiration. You are focusing on affirmative thinking, on affirmative thoughts. You're getting ideas that fly through your mind and capture it. I get up now when I'm meditating. After I finish, I go right to the computer, make a note. And I write morning pages every morning. Sometimes I do evening pages, but I definitely do the morning pages. I try to keep a dream log from time to time. Sometimes I just throw the dreams into the morning pages. But it is this, the self-care. My daughter is now in the middle of her second year of law school. She's 38 years old, no children, no marriage. So she's going to do what she's always wanted to do now, to become a lawyer. She's got a very elaborate self-care discipline. She meditates every morning. She does yoga every morning for an hour. She walks to work. I mean, she does everything. She eats properly. She studies. I mean, you have to live your life not by the calendar of busyness, but by what is yours to do. And if you set your priorities, and if you're not giving time to your family, it's not a priority. So give time to your self-care.
Proof's in the pudding. Would you say that?
What?
Proof's in the pudding.
The proof is in the pudding.
If you're not, if you can't log all the time on the calendar, then it's obviously not important.
You can't get more. You can't get 26 hours of the day. So you have to look at your day and say, what is really important? I need to meditate every day. I attempt to do that in the morning. Sometimes I do it on the bus when I'm being taken someplace else. And so I get it in. But it is important to do the serious spiritual work to nourish ourselves and also to look at what's going through our mind. An idea. Oh, capture that idea. Write it down. That's a book title. It's an article. Yeah. It's something.
Well, in so many ways, it's almost a work smarter than work harder sort of thing. I mean, there's a lot of times in my life where you can, you know, you could be digging a trench with a spoon and working hard when somebody says, I built a shovel. It's like, wow, I could, if only I'd stopped long enough to buy the shovel, I could be so much further ahead. And I think to me, that's the power of meditation and inspiration is that it's so easy in our culture to grind out a job and get to 60, 65, and you're quote, somewhere there, you're going to retire and then go, what do I got? I don't have anything. Yeah. Well, I should have been working on that. Well,
Well, inspiration is a good word, in hyphen spirit.
Right.
So you're taking in spirit. I think that's a really important thing that is in this very busy, busy, noisy life that we often lead. It's very important to take in spirit. And first things first, you know, Franklin Covey, first things first. He was very popular with 20, 30 years ago.
Oh, well, he's still
and
popular.
He still is, but I'm saying we're not hearing it all the time. If it was first things first, we wouldn't be listening to tweets, but that's another topic.
That's another topic. Well, we're almost out of time. Let's talk about your book. I want to just talk about technology. I'm sure if I was watching this show and I'm thinking, okay, I wake up every morning and I type all this stuff on my computer. How do you know what your computer says?
Oh, well, the computer, look at the screen. I use audio software called, first it was Windowize, now it is JAWS. So I listen and I can type and it talks to me. And then I can go back in and edit and all of that. I got help with my first submission to the publisher. And then I went in again and I just went over it word for word myself.
Because, I mean, you and I have emailed back and forth.
Yeah.
And it's like, I wonder how she does
it. I could do email. It's audio software that allows me to do that. I can't play around that much on the internet because the links don't always work and that becomes cumbersome. But I have the habit of getting up and doing the morning pages. And I have the habit of when I'm in writing mode, I go to the typewriter every day and I try to spend at least a couple of hours. You have to.
All right. Well, sadly, we are totally out of time. Didn't that go by so fast?
It went very quickly.
Through the Dark, Yolanda Nava. Through the Dark is coming out this spring, so put it on your Amazon wish list.
www.yolandanava.com is my website. You can track me there.
Okay, and we'll have the producer produce that on the replay so that we can get that in the notes down below so that you can connect to her on the site if you have any questions. And you can also email me. So that's, sadly, that's as much as we're going to have for today. This is the Laura Meek Show. I look forward to seeing you. You guys have a blessed holiday, and I look forward to seeing you in our next show.
You've been listening to the Laura Meek Show. Dream on, fly high, live adventurously on Transformation Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. And we hope you'll join us next month as Laura helps you find your unique gifts so you can bring them to the world. For more information on Laura Meeks or to listen to past shows, visit her website at flyhighliving.com. Check out her hit Dream On 12-week course, where you get the personal attention you need to fly high in your new life.